Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, November 9, 2021. A South Sudanese lawyer and human rights activist says the ongoing internet blackout in Sudan is a violation of human rights.
This is an illegal procedure and it violates human rights. It has caused a lot of damage to institutions, entities, and individuals.
And Jonglei State Police Commissioner says an identified gunman killed three people and injured several others in Panyagor of Twitch East County on Monday.
At around 5 yesterday in the evening, 5 p.m., people who are settling at Malwala Game, that is along the Jonglei Canal, the area of Nyuak Payam, were attacked by the armed Murulay youth.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Jonglei State say an identified gunman killed three people and injured several others in Twitch East County on Monday. Major General Joseph Mayen Akon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, confirms the incident and says no arrests have been made so far. He says police and young men are trying to pursue the attackers. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Twitch East County Commissioner Deng Mabenkwot says at least three men were shot dead and two others were injured in Panyagor on Tuesday by armed men suspected of having crossed into the area from the neighboring Greater Pibor administrative area.
At around 5 yesterday in the evening, 5 p.m., people who are settling at Malwala Game, that is along the Jonglei Canal, the area of Nyuak Payam, were attacked by the armed Murulay youth who are wearing the SPLA uniform, and they killed about three people and wounded two people. They took a rifle of one deceased. We don't have army in Twitch East, so the police were at a distance. So the response of the police is today.
A motive for the attack is not clear, said Mabeng, as most parts of the area are under floodwaters and there are no cattle. Mabeng sent condolences to the families of the deceased and urged them to remain calm. He is urging national officials in Juba to pressure Pibor authorities to enforce the law. If they don't, Mabeng warns the fragile peace walkout between the two areas could collapse.
The conference starts on the 26th, and on the 25th is when they killed the three youth from Uror who are just traveling from Bor to Uror through Panyagor. They just went and killed them both. And on the 26th, while we were even at the conference, that is when they attacked one of our base at Kwerachut, and they wounded two people who are now under medication. Tomorrow there will be a conference where the governor and the chief administrator will all be in Juba. And that conference will also still discuss the peace between Jonglei and Pibor administrative area. And with this one, I don't know, would people pretend that nothing had happened?
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Joseph Mayena Akon confirms the incident took place. He says no arrest has been made yet, but police and local young men are pursuing the attackers. Locally, Amer, the chief administrator for the Greater Pibor administrative area, says although he did not hear about the incident in Panyagor, he cannot rule out the possibility that the assailants came from Pibor.
It's the first time now to hear from you, but I cannot ignore. Automatically, I leave now going to Juba because there is a peace. Talk there to UN between Greater Jonglei and Greater Pibor have been invited by the UN, but now I will order my deputy CA to call Commissioner of Gumuruk and Commissioner of Lukwangule to investigate, to follow up this thing.
Chief Ameya says he has young people inside of Nanam, but says he does not know what they are doing there. Ameya is calling on the national government to expedite the disarmament plan in Greater Jonglei to prevent armed civilians from harming each other. He says it is nearly impossible for local government authorities to control heavily armed young men in the area.
In Greater Bijbor, we don't have enough army. This was the reason in Jonglei we decide we have to add more troops, put in the border in Kedjang and Bichi Beach, in that area of Nanam, so we can control these criminals. I decide to say why they fail, they don't control these people. I know there is a lot of such a thing happen, and we cannot blame, even we cannot blame Greater Bijbor of Jonglei. We know situation in our situation, in our country. Jews, they have more arm, more than government. That was what we're talking. We need more army so we can, if we don't make inclusive disarmament, it's very hard to control our civilians if we still have this done. Yeah.
Last week, Chief Administrator Ameya of Greater Bijbor, Jonglei Governor Dine Chagur, and other officials met in Bor, where they reiterated their commitment to a signed agreement that aims to foster peace and security among their local populations by improving working relations and implementing agreed-to resolutions, including the return of abductees and compensation to family members for those who have been killed. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
A court in Sudan has ruled that the military government must restore internet services. Sudanese human rights activists and media practitioners say the decision to shut down internet was illegal and violates the rights of the Sudanese people. Some citizens say the lack of internet service has affected their lives and caused them economic losses. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
On Tuesday, the Khartoum District Court ruled that internet services cut off since October 25th coup must be restored. However, it appears much of the country remains offline. The head of Sudan's military, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, ordered the telecommunications ministry to immediately shut down the internet service on October 25th, shortly before he dissolved the cabinet and suspended the constitutional declaration that set up the transitional government. Sudanese human rights activists say the decision has affected the lives of citizens and caused them social and economic damage. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, a Sudanese lawyer and human rights activist who identified himself only as Mujahid says many Sudanese citizens do not know their rights.
This is an illegal procedure and it violates human rights. It has caused a lot of damage to institutions, entities and individuals. The military is supposed to reverse this decision and allow people to get their services back.
Mujahid says thousands of Sudanese families have been unable to communicate with their loved ones inside and outside the country because of the internet shutdown. Khalid Al-Nur, editor-in-chief of online news outlet Sudan Press, says the decision has affected his organization's work and caused his group economic losses. Anur says the military leaders should exempt media houses from the internet shutdown and allow them publish information about the situation in the country. He argues that the electronic media outlets have been reliable and faster in reaching viewers, but now they are unable to do so.
The electronic media in Sudan has been on the rise and has been winning the trust of the Sudanese viewers. If you compare it to the traditional newspaper, you will find that the electronic media have a lot of followers and they're able to access the platforms at their convenience.
Sudan's military leaders accuse some electronic and social media organizations of inciting violence and promoting hate speech. But Al-Nur insists journalists have remained professional.
We as electronic press have been observing ethics, truth, and high professionalism in our work. The government is supposed to differentiate between social media and electronic media. Our staff and journalists are professionally trained and are conducting themselves with high integrity.
Hiba Osman manages a wholesale center in the Arkawit neighborhoods in Khartoum. She sells clothes and variety of products for women and posts her goods on social media. is speaking in Arabic. Usman says for over 2 weeks now, she has been unable to sell anything, saying the loss is huge for her business. Usman says, we are no longer accessing our customers and no one can know about our items. So, we are now stranded. She says, normally, when a customer requests an item online, we send them through a vehicle or motorcycle that help in delivering the items, Usman says. Usman calls on the military leaders to restore the internet service so traders can continue their business. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry says oil companies operating in South Sudan are responsible for keeping the environment in the oil fields clean. Joseph Africano Battelle says the Ministry of Environment and Forestry is waiting for results of an audit in the oil fields before holding oil companies accountable for land pollution. Battelle says communities affected by activities of oil companies have all the rights to sue individual companies that violated South Sudan environmental laws.
We are putting our interests as a country, like for us to be able to adapt and also to try to get into a green development trajectory that will require about $100 billion for us to be able to do that. So as a country, we'll be looking for funds internationally because we didn't create this problem. Some people did it, and they have to finance all the projects that will be able to make us a net zero country by 2050. I know people are all looking forward for a good outcome from Glasgow. But I'm telling you people that at the moment, the negotiations are very tough. Yes, the World Leaders Summit was there, the first and the second. The leaders made a lot of pledges, good speeches, but those pledges and the good speeches and what they've told the world is not happening in the negotiating rooms. And we are currently doing our best in order to safeguard our interests as developing countries and all South Sudan in particular.
Why would you negotiate? What are the sticking points? Who is refusing to do what?
So you can have a plan, but for you to be able to implement that plan is the provision of finance. In Paris, the developed countries were supposed to be raising $100 billion annually in order to support countries like ours, but they failed to do that. And now they've pushed that they will be able to attain that goal by 2023. So if now they are pushing, if it was 2020 and now it's going to 2023, what is the probability for them to be able to raise that money? But also at the moment, the money, the $100 billion, is peanuts. For all these countries to be able to fight climate change, the money has to be in trillions. So the thing is now negotiating how to get that money and how to access it is something that we are having difficulties with. Anything else is okay, but you need the money to be able to implement the projects. So Africa and the developing world is what we are fighting for.
The petroleum industry has been in the news for polluting areas in Unity State, and some people are saying, especially people who are petroleum experts, are saying the government is looking the other way when there's a lot of pollution in the oil producing states.
The problem with the oil pollution in South Sudan is understandable. Our oil producing companies have been not following some environmental standards. We in the ministry, we have summoned them, we have given them the standards, but now we are in the process, late process of commissioning an environmental entity firm in order to conduct a comprehensive environmental audit in the oil fields. That report will form the basis on how we'll be dealing with them. We know that there have been a lot of produced water, there have been a lot of oil spills, and the populations are suffering, but we won't be able to act just because of hearsay. That's why this audit will be conducted. It will be comprehensive. The report will come out. It will be tabled to the Council of Ministers, And from there, recommendations and the way forward will go ahead. I've informed the oil companies personally that they have to maintain high environmental standards in their work, because they might think that they will be able to pollute those places, but they are even open to be sued. People from those areas, from the oil fields, have the right to sue any oil company that has conducted or that has caused a lot of pollution. So for them to be able to keep their money, they should be able to do the right thing. For us in the Ministry of Environment, we know it. We hear what our people are saying, but there is a process that has to be followed. That's what I can say. And we are going there.
That's Joseph Africano Batel, South Sudan's Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry. He spoke with me from Glasgow, Scotland, at the COP26 Climate Summit Monday. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, health workers say floods across South Sudan has slowed the rate of vaccination against COVID-19 in the country. That story's lineup after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could be famous, what would you like to be famous for?
I don't know if I want to be famous for anything in particular, but I think being famous in a way that is beneficial to other people, say be famous for having like a really solid foundation that in turn inspires other people to also give back.
I would like to be famous for inventing new things, coming up with new and innovative ideas.
I'd wish to be a vibrant politician in my country, and I wish to be known for being a very good politician.
I would love to be famous in the sector of acting, like as an actor. I'd love to be an inspiration to others. Yeah, I like to inspire people.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at effects of floods on the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. Health officials overseeing COVID-19 vaccinations say ongoing floods in parts of the country is making it difficult to transport vaccine and train vaccinators in the flood-affected counties. The manager of South Sudan Public Health Emergency Operations Center says while the government had planned to vaccinate at least 10% of the population by the end of the year, so far only 0.44% of the population have been vaccinated. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Sacha Butsma, the incident manager for COVID-19 at the World Health Organization in South Sudan, says about 61,000 people have been fully vaccinated so far. Nearly 52,000 people are waiting for their second dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine. She says out of 152,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine received, 79% have been delivered to counties. Butsma says the plan was to deliver vaccine doses to all 80 counties in South Sudan, but the health ministry and the WHO are facing challenges in accessing flood-affected counties in Jonglei State.
Only 28 counties are currently starting with the vaccinations. So the reason is because some of the doses of vaccines have not yet been delivered because of flooding, but in other areas it can also be because of insecurity, because of other reasons. But more importantly, training. So the training has been slightly delayed in some of the areas. And of course, our focus is on quality. We want to make sure that the healthcare workers that actually administer the vaccines are fully aware of what they're doing. As some of them used to work with the AstraZeneca, now they have to be retrained to know exactly how to handle the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Butsma says it is important to also train the people who are handling what's known as the cold chain, the required system of refrigeration for the vaccines, as well as the supervisors and data entry workers. Dr. Angelo Guop-Koch, the head of the Public Health Emergency Operations Center, acknowledges that some vaccination centers in flooded counties have stopped operating.
So those health facilities who were washed away by flood, sure, they have no existence. so sure there is no any vaccination activity in areas which have a flood. But the surrounding areas, we have tried our best to reach closely to those areas that are seriously affected, and people who can manage to reach those areas are sure they are vaccinated.
Quartz says vaccination teams have tried their best to reach some families traveling by boat, but he says not all areas are accessible. He says the ministry had planned to reach at least 10% population by the end of September, but he worries that target will not be met anytime soon.
It have affected our plan and our vision for getting everybody vaccinated at least, but all these factors have contributed. As we know, the government have done its best with the partners. We didn't have location that have missed the vaccine because of vaccine delivery. No. But maybe it is because of the other natural disasters.
Butsma says what's important now is to convince donor nations that South Sudan is in position to finish the vaccines to encourage more donations.
We are still really trying to reach the 10% by the end of December. But we're now at 0.44. We're not even at 1% yet. So actually WHO has set the target for 40% by the end of December. So we of course know that we're not going to be able to make that. But our biggest priority now is to show that we are capable of, as we call it, to absorb a larger quantity of vaccines in a shorter period of time. So we're going to do some pilot vaccination strategy in more densely populated areas, because of course it will be much easier to vaccinate a larger quantity or larger number of people in a shorter period of time.
Butsma says South Sudan will receive 60,000 more doses of AstraZeneca vaccines on Friday and 160,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine soon. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still on COVID, workplace mandates requiring vaccination against COVID-19 in the United States continue to be controversial. The Biden administration is expected to respond to this week's recent federal court decision to temporarily halt federal vaccine mandate rules for large employers. Michelle Quinn reports.
Around the U.S., the fight over workplace rules requiring vaccination against COVID-19 is heating up. The White House is set to respond this week to a court order temporarily halting a federal vaccine mandate for businesses with more than 100 employees. Some states, businesses, and religious groups sued, arguing the mandate is unconstitutional. The Biden administration argues it is necessary. Dr. Vivek Murthy is the U.S. Surgeon General. He spoke on ABC this week.
There are times where we recognize that our decisions have a broader effect on people around us. COVID has reminded us of that. And that's why having these types of requirements in workplaces will be not only helpful, but it's a necessary step to accelerate our pathway out of the pandemic.
The Biden administration says it's the responsibility of the federal government to create and enforce workplace safety rules. But some lawmakers say the COVID-19 mandate goes too far. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is a Republican. He spoke out against the federal rules.
I don't think people want this decision yanked away from them. I don't think they want to allow a precedent where the federal government could come in and just force you to do what it wants you to do.
With more people signing up to get a shot every day, some question whether the federal rules, which will go into effect in January, are worth the struggle. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, spoke on CBS Face the Nation.
We need to ask ourselves, what is our goal? We vaccinated about 81% of adults over the age of 18. Where do we need to get to, and what price are we willing to pay in terms of cultural divide, acrimony, challenges?
While the number of new COVID-19 cases continues to decline in the U.S., an additional 70,000 cases are being recorded every day. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
The Kenya Revenue Authority is targeting rich Kenyans displaying lavish lifestyles on social media and paying little or no tax at all. That's according to Commissioner General Githui Mburu. The Kenya Revenue Authority officers are spending time on social media throttling Kenyan posting photos of luxurious cars throwing expensive parties to ensure their taxes matches what they share on social media. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, economists say the move will increase tax collection.
The Kenya Revenue Authority, KRA, is literally invading social media users in Kenya by luring them to pay tax on what they say every Kenyan must pay their share of taxes. In an interview with Kenya's Business Daily, the Kenya Revenue Authority Commissioner General Githu Mburu said that authority is in the race to bring more people into the tax bracket and reduce tax cheating and evasion in the quest to meet the target. Economist Ali Khan Sacho said that the move by taxman is the best way to increase taxes and that with social media, they'll get more.
The KRA have actually done an incredible job with respect to using social media. I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence that you can collect on social media, which can be used in order to collect more tax. I think, you know, there are plenty of people who are escaping the tax dragnet and probably, you know, living large on social media. So I think that detective work will certainly pay off, and it's a very valid approach for them to be taking.
The Revenue Authority has a team focused on exposing tax cheats through the sites such as Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. The authority boss says that on social media, there are some people posting some nice things such as nice houses, cars, taking their families to good places, and that the authorities see tax in such posts. Beatrice Saisi is a young Kenyan doing door-to-door pedicure services. She says she posts her work on social media, but at times goes a day without earning. She wonders how the Revenue Authority will tax her, given the income is not constant.
For a business like mine, some days I make money. Others are bad. I make nothing at all, yet I posted. So how will they calculate my returns? They should just be contented with the returns I'm filing now. Because I'm just wondering, why would you be taxed for posting something fancy on social media? And then they should know that some people just post for fun and have nothing at all behind the scenes.
Apart from using social media sites, the authority has been using various databases to pursue suspected tax cheats, among them bank statements, import records, motor vehicle registration details, Kenya Power records, water bills, and data from the Kenya Civil Aviation Authority, which reveal individuals who own assets such as helicopters. Economist Ali Sacho says the authority has to understand other businesses that have fluctuating earnings like that of content creators before imposing tax on them.
Creatives who have very fluctuating incomes. I think the KRA needs to be more innovative to get closer to the taxpayer, the creative taxpayer, understand the volatility of earnings, and therefore assist in smoothing tax payments that an individual might be encountering.
The crackdown on the rich is part of the commitment that Kenya made to the International Monetary Fund, IMF, to recover unpaid taxes from the high net worth professionals and traders in efforts to raise the national revenues. Reporting for viewers, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with some classic by Mbelia Bell. This one is entitled Nayoki Sango. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus.
to my abandon. Bonnie, you're selling a mobile.